Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, January 7th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A police arrest three Newsday staff members for allegedly writing falsehoods.
They have been detained for the night at Harare Central Police Station. We were informed that they were going to appear at court today. However, we were informed on our way to court by the investigating officers that they had received instructions that the accused persons be retained.
Police arrest over 100 motorists in Maswingo for allegedly violating various traffic regulations.
It's very unfair what actually the police are doing, because I had to spend about 2 hours detained at the Chikato police station after my car was impounded for failing to have a working fire extinguisher. They are now demanding $100.
And what will bring political change in Zimbabwe in 2016?
So it's 35 years of progress. There's been a lot of progress in Zimbabwe. Yes, if you want to heighten and highlight the negatives, go ahead.
For these stories and much more, stay tuned.
Police in Harare today arrested Newsday deputy editor Ngaba Machazi, journalist Kolisani Ngube, and a representative of their company Alpha Media Holdings, Sifikile Tawete, for allegedly writing falsehoods. The trio, who are represented by Taona Nyamakura, are facing allegations of allegedly communicating or publishing false statements prejudicial to the state over a story in the newspaper's Wednesday edition titled CIO Secretly Gets Bonuses. They are charged with contravening some provisions of the Criminal Law Codification and Reform Act. Government has been struggling to pay salaries and bonuses of its 550,000-strong workforce, but it is known to prioritize the security sector. Nyamakura tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that his clients will spend the night in detention.
They have been detained by Zimbabwe Republic Police for the night at Harare Central Police Station.
We understand at one time that they were expected to appear in court today. What transpired?
I do confirm we were informed that they were going to appear at court today, and we had actually prepared to go and argue for their bail. However, we were informed on our way to court by the investigating officers that they had received instructions that the accused persons be returned to Harare Central. And when we proceeded to Harare Central, we were then informed that detention orders had been issued and that they were now spending the night at Harare Central Police Station. They have been formally charged.
And what is the charge?
It is alleged that they contravened Section 31, Paragraph A, Subparagraph 3, or alternatively 31B, because they published a story yesterday in the Newsday newspaper, which was headed CIOs Secretly Get Bonuses, which the state alleges was false.
But what are your clients telling you? Are they still standing by their story?
They do stand by their story. They had no reason to believe that it was false. And they, in fact, don't understand the basis upon which the state has brought the charges. But we hope as they continue their investigation, they will shed more light themselves on the factual basis of the charge.
Are they complaining about the treatment or all is well at the moment?
At the moment, we have no reason to complain against the police. They have been quite professional. And we hope the spirit continues.
That was lawyer Taona Nyamakura speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Efforts to get a comment from the police were futile as police spokesman Chief Superintendent Paul Nyati was not responding to calls made by Studio 7. The Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Union of Journalists, Orozuji Foster Dongozi, condemned the police for the arrest.
Obviously, that is something that is totally unacceptable and is a negative pointer to ourselves as a country. That is exactly 7 days into the new year, two journalists from a private newspaper organization that are going to spend the night in police cells, and that on the 5th of January, a correspondent for the Herald was beaten up by police while covering the riots in Chitungulu. So for us, really, that is a very bad beginning to the year. And that is a point that as journalists we need to be afraid, and very afraid for that matter.
Let's talk about another development in Parliament yesterday, where it was at first pronounced that journalists would need police clearance. And we read in the Herald today that the Clerk of Parliament has said those provisions were done without consulting Parliament. What have you heard?
Obviously, that's another reflection of the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing. But certainly, we made our presentations and our positions known to the authorities that how dare they require police clearances from law-abiding, hard-working journalists, when we are all aware of the colorful characters in Parliament, colorful backgrounds and colorful individuals from whom we never ask for police clearances when we interview them, in some instances when there is obviously quite a need, I think.
That was Zuj Secretary General Foster Dongozi speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
In Chitungwiza, meanwhile, the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is reporting that its member, lawyer Kennedy Masie, is representing three juveniles, Lisbeth Mutero, aged 15 years, and a Form 2 student at Mutero High School in Maswingo, Takudzwa Chirwadzimba, aged 16 years, a Form 4 student at Zengeza 2 High School, and Simbarashe Nkwezaramba, aged 19 years, who were arrested by police officers on Tuesday and charged with contravening Section 36 of the Criminal Law Codification and Reform Act, Chapter 9, for allegedly committing public violence. The trio was arrested together with 40 other residents of Chitungwiza. They have since been released on free bail. The other detainees were released on $50 bail each. Masie tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that all 40 have been released.
So I'm just coming out of court right now. Everyone was released on bail. And there were two minors, juveniles, below the age of 18, who were also arrested in the business. They were given free bail, but the rest were given $50 bail. And they were supposed to report it to this police station every Friday.
How many people were actually in detention?
There were 40 people that were in detention who were arrested on Tuesday. So today, those 40 appeared in court.
Is there any trial date that has been set?
21st of January.
That was Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights member lawyer Kennedy Masie on the line from Chitungwiza.
As preparations for the opening of schools reach fever pitch, some women in the diaspora say the falling of the rand and tough working conditions, especially in South Africa, is negatively affecting their ability to send their children back to school next week. A lady who wanted to be known only as Eunice and works as a domestic servant in Cape Town says she cannot afford to send a child to school for Form 5 studies. Eunice tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawie, although she has been in South Africa for 15 years, life for her has been tough as she had to make huge sacrifices in order to find money to sustain a family.
I'm doing domestic work, so I'm coming from the work now. So it's hard for me, for us women, us single mothers, to work like hard when you get nothing. You know, if to change rand into dollar, it's difficult, it's pain. And I've got two children to pay, or the other one finished Form 4. So it's difficult to make that money using rands into dollars.
How many children do you have?
I've got three children.
What are their grades?
The one is in grade 6, the one Form 3, the other one finished Form 4. But I have to stop that Form 4 because I couldn't find the money to send him go back to school. I have to drop that one.
How much money do you need for all your three children to go to school next week?
I think $600.
So are you able to get that $600 from what you are earning in South Africa?
No, I can't. Way from. I am just $600. My wish, I'll work hard and find that, but I can't. The job I'm working is nothing. I can't get anything. I'm just like I'm playing.
How long have you been in South Africa?
Oh, 15 years, my darling.
So what is your wish?
I try. My wish is if I found money, I can just do some business, whatever can give me money, not to work like this.
That was a lady who wanted to be identified only as Eunice, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye from Cape Town, South Africa.
Having endured over a decade of hardships as a result of an unrelenting economic crisis, Zimbabweans have developed a reputation of not being resilient but also innovative on how to get by. Sports betting has become one of the increasingly popular ways of earning a living for many people in the country. Our correspondent Taurai Shaba reports.
About half a dozen men huddle together as they listen attentively to a horse racing commentary being broadcast on one of the big screen television sets in a popular betting place at Gwerus Mkoba 6 shopping center in the Midlands province. Among them is a man who chooses to identify himself only as Moyo and is one of the well-known regulars at this place. Moyo, in his early 40s, readily volunteers to talk about his experience as a horse racing punter. He says he detests betting as he believes it is immoral and reveals that he grew up with a father who used to squander most of his wages on gambling, which made him fail to take care of his family. But in an ironic twist of fate, Moyo admits he himself became drawn to betting on horses, which has been his regular source of income since the time he got out of formal employment in 1998.
When I was an adult, so when I was already working, I would see people making money from gambling. When I started betting, I had a dream. I dreamt a race and its results. And then the following day, I went and betted. And the numbers just came as they appeared in my dream. Then I started believing. I said, I know this thing, I could make money and earn a living. Though I was working, because I had got a surplus amount.
Although it is often associated with gambling, sports betting is different in that it is regularized or controlled by law, while various forms of gambling are sometimes illegal. In Zimbabwe, the Gaming and Lotteries Act regulates the sports betting industry as well as other betting games like lotteries and casinos. Horse racing has for a long time been the only sport in the country on which punters could place bets, but in the past few years, several betting companies have been given licenses to operate bets on other sports like soccer, basketball, cricket, tennis, as well as dog racing. Although facts and figures are not readily available, there has been a rise in sports betting in the country, and in May, government announced it had stopped granting betting licenses to curb the upsurge of sports betting in the country. Sports betting and other gambling games like lotteries and casinos are often euphemistically referred to as games of chance. In Zimbabwe, however, they are no longer just games, but a means of survival for many owing to high unemployment. Moyo says it is not surprising that many young people are now among punters in sports betting.
When I grew up, all I knew is to know that horse racing gambling was for the retired people that would take their money as leisure, doing gambling for leisure purposes, not solely to get money to survive. Because already they had made up their lives, they were spending their monies. But currently the situation in our country that we've got no employment, the industries, they are closed. These youngsters, after school, they have nowhere to go and work. Gambling is now the only option they are left with to look for money.
The act of betting involves putting a certain amount of money or wager on the result of a sports game or race, and there are many types of bets that one can put their money on. Moyo says he likes placing bets on horses because he calls himself a veteran punter and understands even the most subtle details of the game. He, however, admits that winning, especially big amounts that matter, is never easy.
On some other days, I might be lucky to win, but on other days, I might have a streak of losing. I might even go for 4 days without even winning. That also will affect my family, because they'll be expecting on each and every day that I should bring them something. They actually know that I survive on gambling. Besides looking for money through peace jobs, but I solely survive on gambling.
24-year-old Neva Shoko has been involved on betting on soccer matches for the past 2 years. The unemployed youth says he gets money for betting from doing odd jobs and also donations from relatives and friends. Although, like most Zimbabweans, he is a keen follower of the English Premier League, Shoko says he prefers to bet on Italian, German and Spanish leagues, which he says are more predictable. He places bets every weekend and says he's usually assured of winning once a month, and though paltry, the winnings enable him to buy himself food and clothes.
For a month, I use almost $4 to bet, because I bet every weekend using $1. So if I get $20, I make a profit. I buy food for myself and clothes, because now I'm not working and no one is supporting my family.
Like Moyo, Shoko believes that gambling is a vice which people should avoid, but he says in the absence of a more conventional way of earning a living, he has no choice but to be involved in sports betting.
It's true, but there is nothing we can do because of this economy. You have to do something even bad to get money.
While the sports betting industry may provide a means of earning a living for some, most of those involved in it say they prefer a more straightforward way and hope that the new year will bring a new lease of life for the country's economy. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shava.
Coming up,
what will bring change in Zimbabwe in 2016?
Stay tuned, but first a look at regional and international news.
Polish President Andrzej Duda has signed a controversial new law giving the country's conservative government direct control of state media despite condemnations by some European Union leaders.
US and European stock markets fell in Thursday's trading after China again suspended stock trading because of a massive sell-off there.
A massive truck bombing in western Libya has killed at least 50 people and wounded dozens more at a police training center, according to officials and local news reports.
And a monkey who took a selfie that went viral can be considered the copyright owner of the photo, a federal judge said yesterday. U.S. District Judge William Orrick said that while copyright protection could be extended to animals by Congress and the President, current copyright laws do not cover animals.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
In our political slot this week, we examine the debate over what will bring change in Zimbabwe in 2016. Given that the next elections are not until 2018, who will set up opposition or ZANU-PF? Reporter Ndimiake Mwakalele sought perspectives from Director Pezai Ruhanya of the Zimbabwe Democratic Institute, who splashes doubt on any change coming from political parties given their discord, and ZANU-PF UK Chairman Nick Mangwana, who says ZANU-PF will finally deliver change in 2016.
I'd say a lot is going on that I would agree with. So the moment our infrastructure development projects kick off, we expect there to be a turnaround in the economy. The political front is not a big deal.
Well, do you agree with that, Dr. Ruhanya?
There is a lot that is going on. And essentially, the lot that is going on is not good for the state, because the political economy of the state has fundamentally shifted for the past 15 years. It is deteriorating. We virtually have a monumental informalization of the economy, where you have 85% unemployment and 15% holding the state bureaucrats.
if the economy continues to deteriorate, if we continue to have a vendor economy, there's going to be a point when citizens will say, ah, we have had enough of you guys. No more slogans, deliver.
Mr. Mangwana, if you could respond to that, to the fact that this is ZANU-PF's 35th year now in power, and some are saying, well, when is ZANU-PF going to come through?
Okay, each mandate we get, we fulfill it, and after 5 years, we go back to look for another mandate. So it's not a blanket 35 years. We're talking of about seven elections, we're talking about seven manifestos which have been delivered. Because we deliver on each manifesto that we get a fresh mandate from the people. So it's 35 years of progress. Yes, if you want to heighten and highlight the negatives, go ahead. But there are a lot of positives in the country over the last 35 years.
Now, Dr. Ruhanya, the last elections, the 2013, ZANU-PF seemed to have won that election legitimately. Of course, even though there are some debates about that. So even though there seems to be such dissatisfaction in the country, how do you reconcile that with the reality on the ground?
Yes, ZANU won in 2013 election. Let me not put in assertion to their victory. They won in 2013. The policy called the Zim Asset, which is premised on a 27 billion budget to run the cost of that policy in 5 years. But if you look from 2014 until now, they are putting up a budget of less than 5 billion, which is a clear failure of the policy. So before you even go to statistically analyze each sector, you can see that there is a failure to organize the economy of the state. And the problem we are facing, critically, which ZANU also knows, is that the old is dying and the new cannot be born. And in this, in the red numb, morbid symptoms appear. And these morbid symptoms, a variety of morbid symptoms, you see them in the economy, you see them in the social sector, you see them in ZANU and the body politic. In ZANU, there is no longer elite cohesion. Cohesion within the political elite in ZANU is not there. The problems with Njuru, now the problems with Mnangagwa that they are defying, there is no longer elite contenders. And because of that, investors will not come into an economy where those who run the affairs of the state are not in agreement.
Mr. Mangwana, if you can also jump in and, of course, respond to some of those realities. Obviously, we know about the fractures within ZANU-PF, and many do raise concern about the state and the strength of ZANU-PF.
I would like first to thank Dr. Ruhanya for his concession that we won the 2013 elections fairly. That I accept and am grateful. Regarding the robust debate in ZANU-PF, all these machinations, it's because it's a mass-based organization where the people have a voice. If ZANU-PF was such a dictatorship, you would not have so many people trying to position themselves strategically for power. Now, when it comes to the 27 billion, the 27 billion is infrastructural development, which is happening. It's not bags of money that are supposed to come carrying 27 billion. It's 27 billion over 5 years. So far, we are all on that pathway to get that investment. How many deals have we signed with China? How many deals have we signed with Russia? All that goes towards that 27 billion. Okay, over to you.
Dr. Ruhanya,
there are everyday forms of resistance that are taking place in Zimbabwe. And what I can tell you is that there has never been a people that has been oppressed for all time. Mangwana, as a member of ZANU, would know that at some point in the history of this country, there was a point when the Smith regime and its predecessors thought that there would never be black rule. Look at the 2008 election. There was never, including Ms. Mangwana, who thought that the head of state would be defeated in election, that ZANU would lose a parliamentary election, that all the municipalities, and virtually all the municipalities in this country in 2008, ZANU would not win one. It was on the background of the deliberating economic crisis, which we are currently facing.
Mr. Mangwana, in light of that reality, is 2016 the year that you see ZANU-PF really coming through for the people in the way that they understand?
The only message I have to say is there's a part we have to deliver. There is no question about that. We owe it to the people of Zimbabwe.
That was ZANU-PF UK Chairman Nick Mangwana speaking with us from London. You also heard from Pedse Ruhanya, who is the director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute. Both spoke with Studio 7's Ndimeyake Mwakalele. For an extended version of this interview, please go on to our website www.voezimbabwe.com.
Police have arrested over 100 motorists and impounded more than 200 vehicles in Zimbabwe's Masvingo province for allegedly violating various traffic regulations, which include driving without fire extinguishers. Most of the motorists are locked up at a local police station for failing to pay newly gazetted fines of up to $100 each. Our correspondent Gandri Maramba reports from the provincial capital.
Some of the motorists were released from police custody and instructed to raise money to pay fines for offences ranging from driving without fire extinguishers to lack of red traffic sign posts. Over 200 important vehicles condemned to have some defects are being kept at Shikato police station. Some of the angry motorists released this afternoon said they won't be able to raise money to pay the fines. They claimed that some of them will end up paying up to $400 each for allegedly violating various traffic laws. One of the motorists, Tatenda Moyo, claimed that the government is targeting motorists in order to raise money to boost its drying coffers.
It's very unfair what actually the police are doing, because I had to spend about 2 hours detained at the Chikato police station after my car was impounded for failing to have a working fire extinguisher. They are now demanding $100. My car is fully licensed. It has got everything that is required for it to move around the streets of Masvingo. But actually what matters most now is what the government is seems like it's trying to find ways through these hefty fines that they are imposing on us, because $100 is a lot of money.
Another local resident who declined to be identified in fear of being victimized by the police said he is shocked that he was locked up in a filthy police cell for allegedly breaking a minor traffic offense. He said this was very unfair.
It's a spot fine. Where do I get the money? The government needs $100 from me again, so I don't think it's fair. And they have impounded the car, maybe they will start to charge for keeping the car.
Tsitsima Kamure, a student whose car was also impounded, said she was shocked when the police demanded $300 for three offenses. She has no hope of raising the money.
My car was impounded yesterday because I didn't have a third number plate, fire extinguisher, and a triangle, and each offense is $100, of which I can't afford to pay $300 because my parents are civil servants. They haven't gotten a bonus for last year, so I don't even know how I'm going to pay this, and I'm a student, so it's quite rough.
Masvingo Police spokesperson Inspector Charit Mazula, who declined to be recorded on tape by Studio 7, confirmed the arrest but said she could not ascertain the exact number of motorists arrested and the numbers of cars impounded. Some critics say the government has become desperate in raising money to extend or finding all means of raising money to pay its 500,000-strong workforce while catering for other needs of Zimbabweans. Reporting for Studio 7 in Masvingo, this is Gandri Maramba. Nguva yekufara inokosha kupinda yekusuwa. Nguva yekufara inokosha kupinda yekusuwa. Rega ndifare inguva yacho. Rega nditambe ndiyo nguva yangu. Rega zvakadaro nguva yemafaro. Siya nditambe inguva yangu. Rega ndifare ndiyo nguva yacho. Rega nditambe nditambe nasi. Rega zvakadaro nguva yemafaro. Siya nditambe inguva yangu.
Nguva yekufara, a song there from the late Chiwoniso Maraire, reminding us of the importance of celebrating life amidst hardships.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when the Women's Roundtable will discuss the preparations for schools opening next week.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Police arrested three Newsday staff members for allegedly writing falsehoods.
And police again arrested over 100 motorists in Maswingo for allegedly violating various traffic regulations.
And Zimbabweans differ sharply on what will bring political change in the country in 2016.
And that's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
Good night, Zimbabwe, and please do stand by for the Ndebele Bulletin.